Welcome to the Underground, the Steel City Underground, the black and gold standard for Pittsburgh Steelers coverage. Now, here's your host, Joe Kuzma and Brian E. Roach.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Steel City Underground podcast. My name is Joe Kuzma, and guess who's with me? Brian. Brian's back. Wait, we're back together. The band is back together, and it's almost kind of double your pleasure, double your fun. I wonder what it would be like to be on a tandem bike with you, Brian. How's it going, man?
A tandem bike?
Yeah, you know, like the
I know. I don't want to be on a tandem bike. That's not fun.
It would be a disaster.
You'll make me do all the pedaling. I know how this will go. I'll be on the back. You'll have your feet off the pedals and la, 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 and I'll be doing all the work. To hell with that.
Well, you know, we almost like resemble like previous comedy duos of the, you know, yesteryear, like, because I'm tall and you're short. So we would have a problem where either my knees are hitting the handlebars or your back or you're not reaching the pedals, depending on the way that bike's set up.
I don't know that I'm technically short. I'm just shorter than you.
Well, yeah, you know, but still that presents a problem. Like, you know.
Well, I guess.
Yeah, maybe. But anyways, we were going to try and talk some football. We're late to the game there this week. We did miss a show earlier this week because you and I couldn't get together and, you know, for various scheduling reasons and purposes and other reasons, too. We didn't really have a whole lot to talk about. I went to record something and then realized there wasn't a whole lot to talk about. It ended up being 10 or 11 minutes without you, Brian. And I said, I'm just going to scrap this and wait until I got you available. So we got some burning questions with training camp. Steelers off on Thursday, so no new news as of Thursday. But we get to live vicariously through some of the reports from the pool reporters. You know, the pool reporters, the ones that, you know, whenever they print something like Eric Ebron lays out for this catch and you're just like trying to visualize it in your head. It really sucks not being able to be there and see and experience and give our own comments. And we really, I don't know, do we really want to comment on what somebody else is commenting about? I mean, we don't usually do that to begin with. And those who have got their hands slapped for not attributing it to anyone also. So, yeah, that's never good. But, you know, there's just your usual suspects that are there, like a Mark Cabali or Ed Bouchette and et cetera. There's a lady that's with ESPN now, Will Graves with
Brooke
the AP.
Pryor.
Brooke Pryor, that's her name. I still can't get her name in my head. I still have Jeremy Fowler and an image of him, and that's just not good for me when I go to sleep. So anyhow,
no, you should stop that immediately.
He really is a tall drink of water too. So anyhow, these are the folks that are out there, and you know, take their firsthand accounts and experiences there. We'll opine on some of these other things that are going on based on what we've gleaned, I guess, from them, instead of just, you know, regurgitating anything you could just get on Steelers.com. So I guess we'll get right down to it, and who knows how much actual meat we'll have to this, but we'll find out.
Yeah, why not?
For some reason, I really want to talk about Ryan Switzer, but we'll put him in here. Well, let's put him in here right at the beginning. He put a target on He put a target on his back. He wants to be the best slot. He says he wants to be in that Wes Welker category. A guy's got to get like more than, you know, two targets or two snaps for that matter. He's got to get on the field in order to do that. And all intents and purposes, all of these guys are saying, you know, he's having a pretty great camp. And I don't see any reason to just cut loose from, you know, I look at the receivers that are here and the guys that are eligible for practice squad. And you're going to have 16 on the practice squad and four you can protect. I know a lot of people hated Switzer. I don't remember. Did you have him making your, You're 53.
I did not, and I actually I tweeted myself out. I took ownership of what may end up being a bad take on that on Twitter today, because of the reports. Look, I thought Deion Kane was going to take advantage of his opportunity, and based on what I'd seen of Ryan Switzer, you know, I as I've said many times, I have nothing against Ryan Switzer. I think he's a wonderful human being. I just didn't think he was a very good football player in relation to professional football. And I was tired of the running around for 20 yards to gain one, you know,
mostly special teams.
Yeah. But, you know, I have to admit that a lot of people are saying a lot of positive things about Switzer. And they're also saying he's outplaying the heck out of Deion Kane. Doesn't sound like there's much competition right now for that fifth spot, if there's a fifth spot, which I'm sure there is a fifth spot. I just don't think there's going to be a sixth. But the fifth receiver spot sounds like Switzer's taking control of it, at least at this point into camp.
I do think that maybe Deion Kane, it might be practice squad eligible here too. You know, he played for two teams last year. He ended up on the Colts practice squad. That's how the Steelers ended up poaching him. So I don't know that he's a vested veteran in that much. And even therefore, you know, and I'll freely admit, the eligibility things, that's what the Omar Khans and people of the world get paid to know and figure out when you're structuring the roster and knowing all the legalese there. I always thought there was the one year I thought Jordan Dangerfield wasn't eligible anymore either, and then he was, and I know they've changed some of the eligibility. I don't think he no longer is, but maybe somebody like Marcus Allen is. I do believe you at least have to have eight games played, and it looks like Deion Kane had gotten 13 in last season. So, you know, very little playing time, and I thought he could be maybe the big play type guy too, and he's got a bigger frame, but I think Switzer also kind of fills like a niche that maybe the Steelers don't have another guy, or they want another copy of having out on the field. Hey, I went out and I'll take ownership of this in the back rooms. We're just talking about this. I said this is the guy on third down that you just have run toward the line to gain and turn around and catch the ball, and you get a first down and not much more out of it. He's not the guy, kind of like Jesse James. He's not the guy that you throw the ball to and expect to get, you know, you throw a 6-yard pass and you get an extra, you know, 13, 14 yards out of it, and it's a 20-yard play. I don't ever really see that coming from Switzer, and he's smaller too. I think a lot of these guys, you know, don't have necessarily a whole lot of effort into bringing him down, be it linebackers. Even some of these corners are pretty big guys too. So that's where it's at. Also on the special teams kind of aspect, who else is there? You know what I mean? I know they tried to get Cam Sutton to be there. I know Deontay Johnson may win the punt return job, and he returned a kick or a punt last year for a touchdown. That was against the Cardinals, I believe. And, you know, he's definitely got the talent, and he had the talent in college, as did Switzer. So what's it hurt? The guy's getting paid, you know, a very minimal rookie contract, and it's his last year on that deal. If we're talking about it for him being re-signed next year, they'll go, you know, wide receivers, unfortunately, the business of football, dime a dozen. You know, the Steelers have drafted, you know, a wide receiver practically every year and sometimes two over the last decade or so. They're always grabbing somebody. And you get you get guys that could be camp phenoms or whatever, or Johnny Holton or somebody like that that gets in for a few snaps and runs in a straight line. And I mean, for all the more grief that some people gave other players, there's a guy who never caught any of the passes that went his way last year. So, you know, that's I don't get Ryan Switzer. You know, I don't know if he was really hurt or what his injury situation was too. But once Ben went down, he wasn't a favorite target of Mason Rudolph, and I'm not even sure he was around long enough to play with Doc Hodges either. So, it's one of those things. I really like Deion Kane too, but I think if he's eligible, he's a practice squad type guy. It's just a matter of hearing all of this. It's all the smoke around the fire of Ryan Switzer, and he kind of set the flames to that himself. So we'll see. He had the bet with Mark Madden last year, which Mark Madden got the last laugh, unfortunately, because the guy didn't play at all. So it was kind of a stupid bet. So, but it's the guy that's throwing the ball to him. So do you believe Ryan Switzer when he says, you know, Ben's back and he's throwing these type of passes and this and that? And he's not the only one saying it. They ask everybody, all the offensive linemen, everybody else. Mike Tomlin, and Tomlin will always like give somebody some praise and throw like a very, he's never negative, but his jab is just right in the middle. Like, I would like a little more tighter of a spiral or something like that.
Right.
And he does that with everybody, but you're never just going to trounce anybody. Oh, this guy sucks. He probably won't make the team. That's not what you're going to end up seeing. But is Ben back? I think so. And is he better than ever? Maybe. We don't know how long that injury's been nagging him.
Yeah, that's the big question is, you know, look, Ben's got a reputation for playing through injuries even when he shouldn't. And he's had that reputation for a long time. He's a tough guy. He's also got a bit of a reputation for being a bit of a dramatist. There you go. I didn't want to say drama queen. I'll make up a word, a dramatist.
But yeah, we make them up as we go along.
So he makes more sometimes of things than he needs to, I don't know, maybe make himself look better. But the thing is, you just don't know. He may not ever have mentioned the elbow injury. It may have just been a thing that was bothering him and slightly nagging. And he just thought, hey, I'm getting older. It's what my body does. And to the point when it got much worse. From all accounts, and I mean, you're talking now about Caboli, you're talking about Pryor, you're talking about every beat reporter out there, and guys that, now I can't even remember his name. and this is a guy I trust completely.
Jim Wexel.
Yeah, Wex. Oh, my God. Wexel basically saying the same things. It's look. Ben appears to be not only back, not only have velocity, but they were absolutely marveling all day on Twitter yesterday and social media about the accuracy that he was showing, where he was just dropping dimes on everybody and putting balls all over the place. Switzer's commented on it. Vance McDonald's commented on it. I mean, you're not talking about just Ryan Switzer, stroking his best buddy there.
Yeah.
It's everybody.
His meal ticket.
Everybody is saying it. Yeah, his meal ticket, Everybody's saying the same stuff. So is Ben back? Yeah. I mean, we've been saying all along, we thought that's, why not look at it like he's going to be back and he's going to be good, as opposed to just going, oh, he's going to be terrible because I choose to be a Debbie Downer. Well, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, damn it.
No, that's the last thing you want
to be.
Yeah, especially with the Steelers not having any opt-outs and appearing to be not only healthy but at full strength and maybe even improved upon the talent that they have. It's a scary thought what a healthy Ben Roethlisberger brings to this team when you look at the defense. That's the other thing. Maybe we just jump over to that real quick is, the defense – what, they've been in the lead for sacks over the last three seasons. They had a boatload of turnovers, and they're saying they're even faster and better last year. Well, of course, Minka has a training camp now, which he didn't have with this team last year. Devin Bush isn't a rookie anymore. Bud Dupree is getting paid at least for one season. A lot of people like Alex Highsmith a lot, too, and have already commented on how advanced he looks even for not having like OTAs and mini camps and stuff like that, and whether or not he's part of that, a significant part of that rotation. Stephon Tuitt back, who was a wrecking ball before getting hurt. Joe Hayden, Pro Bowler, Steven Nelson, we've been on his jock, the glove, putting up the numbers just like Stephon Gilmore. Trust me, if they weren't throwing his direction, there was a reason for it, It's like, can the defense be a repeat? I mean, we're talking about all the offensive things that have been bad, and we got other guys we're going to say, hey, are they having a bounce back year and this and that? And Ben being the chief piece of all of that, the main architect of whether or not there's success there. But on the defensive side of the ball, it's like, will the defense be as good as it was last year? There's no reason to not think so if they're all healthy. And we didn't even say TJ Watt's name yet. And this guy, probably should have been a defensive MVP. Force fumbles, eight different games, turn the ball over. Like, I can't tell you how many of these things I did on the website where you look back for a play of the year, and it's either TJ Watt or Bud Dupree with a strip sack. It was insane last year how many strip sacks they had. I don't know about the turnovers. Turnovers are a fluky thing, but if they're able to put the pressure on, I can't see them at least being at the same level as they were last year, and they don't even have to be if the offense steps it up.
Absolutely. That's the big key right there. Look, turnovers are will-o'-the-wisps. They come, they go. Sometimes they fall your way. Sometimes they don't. It's the magical mayhem that comes from having an oblong ball. They're going to be in position to create turnovers consistently. Bud and TJ are going to continue to be in the backfield. They're going to continue to wreak havoc back there. If you add guys in like Ola and Alex Highsmith, you add Devin Bush in and as a second-year guy, Vince Williams doing what he does, Stephon Tuitt, as you said. Look, there's really not a good reason not to expect this defense to either live up to what they did last year or improve on it. And we've been pretty adamant. We think that this could be the year that Terrell Edmunds starts to come into his own. a full camp with Minka, they start to be more, you know, copacetic with each other, more collaborative in the way they play. Maybe he takes a step forward. All it takes is some small improvements to make this defense a lot better, and it was really good to begin with. But the key to what you said is the defense itself can still get better. They don't have to have the turnovers that they had last season in order to do the same things, right? Because the offense is going to score more with Ben Roethlisberger behind the center. There's just no question about it. The offense is going to be considerably better the way it looks. And in so doing, that takes a lot of pressure off the defense to have to come up with scores and to have to turn the ball over all the time. You're not looking at them to do that. If all they do is make a stand and have guys be able to get off the field after, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 downs instead of, you know, long series, maybe they don't have turnovers, but that's kind of just as good. You know what I mean?
No, that's actually great. And in fact, think about what the defense can do if they're playing with a lead instead of coming from behind. That could be scary thoughts for, you know, opposing teams as well. And I don't know. There's so many places we could jump here. We're on defense. Does Bud Dupree, does he replicate? Let's put it this way. Replicating success, what, 11 and a half sacks?
Yeah.
Do we think he's a double-digit sack guy? Again, I think it's possible. Will it be 11 and a half? Is it really a regression if he gets 10 or 10 and a half? Some people will say so just because of that one digit. I don't know that he's going to go out there and have 16 sacks, but I still think he's going to be disruptive. Do you think he? Yeah, you're just chomping at the bit on this one. So what? Well, Bud Dupree. I can't even think of what I'm trying to say here. You just can't wait to comment. You know what? I'm going to give you the old Pat Summerall to John Madden thing. What do you think about Bud Dupree, John?
I'll tell you what I think about Bud Dupree, Pat. Bam! That's what I think.
Look at the hammocks on that guy.
You're right. I'm jumping up and down. I'm going nuts over here trying to get contain my excitement about this. Look, TJ Watt's not a secret, and you can say he wasn't a secret last season, but he certainly got so much more notoriety. You add Stephon Tuitt back into that line mix. I think there is a better than good chance, and minimally a 50-50 chance, that Bud Dupree leads this team in sacks this year.
Ooh.
And in so doing, I think he hits double digits, provided, knock on wood, or whatever wood-like substance is nearby, he doesn't get hurt. I think you're going to see, we've talked about this. He continues to progress. Bud Dupree doesn't take slides backwards, right? He seems to get better every year. If he continues that trend, he did 11 and a half sacks last year. Who's to say he doesn't come up with 14 this year? That's the number I have in the back of my pocket, in my wallet. I have a little note, just like Kevin Costner had it written in draft day. Oh, whatever that guy's name was. My note says Bud Dupree gets 14 sacks. No matter what.
No matter what.
That's what my note says.
No matter what. Oh, geez. That's, I don't know. I wasn't going to shoot my shot quite like you did, but we'll just leave yours right there because that's a pretty big one.
I'm old and I got juice and I'm shooting my shot.
What about TJ, though? I mean, that's kind of hard to live up to the same standard there, but I still think double-digit sacks, maybe four force fumbles, even if he does like half. I mean, still, you look at his brother, too, and you know what a thoroughbred he had been up until getting derailed with some injuries. It's kind of like whatever these boys were drinking, whatever's in the water, whatever Mama Watt was feeding them. It's just, and we still need to get Derek to be DJ. We need a petition for that. Is it Derek Joseph? I can't remember. He has a J. He has a J in his middle name. I'm looking it up right now. I always forget.
Yeah,
Derek John. It's Derek John. Yeah, he wouldn't be graced with such a great name like Joseph, like some others. You know, great leaders, and Brian's giving me the stink face. Nah. Hey, man, you know, we won't get into that. I was going to say, you know,
All right, Joseph.
Yeah, yeah. We won't get into that. You know, that's all. You know, it's funny when anybody addresses me by that. By the way, everybody calls me Joe. Nobody calls me Joseph except for my mother, and even then, she didn't. She used to call me with a foreign slang term for Joe. In Croatian, and that's how she picked me out of a class. There were actually three other Joes when I was growing up in grade school in my same class. So, like, that's, you know, that can be a little confusing at times. It's just everybody went, what? Yeah, what? So, what? Derek John. He needs to be DJ. We need a petition for that. So, let me see. What else do we have? Secondary, among the best in the NFL. We never talk about Mike Hilton. We never talk about Cameron Sutton. I say they are. I don't care what anybody thinks about Terrell Edmonds. I think Terrell Edmonds, they're blowing smoke up his, up his butt too this year. And talking about, I always thought he looked great in camp, looked great in practice. I think he just gets a raw deal because it's kind of like when people like poo-poo on Ike Taylor and all the great guys that were around him, like Hall of Fame and All-Pro talent that was around him. And you look back and, you know, I know he's very friendly with us in our show and everything like that now. But even looking back, you think about how solid he was because you don't realize what you got until it's gone. And everybody that followed him was, not that strong. Antoine Blake. So anyway.
Yep. Artie Burns.
Aw, poor Artie, man.
So, yeah, no, let's have a moment of silence for Artie Burns and his injury.
And his career, because that's a major, rest in peace. Yeah, I think he was on a 1 year with the Bears, and maybe somebody will give him a look at camp next year if things are back to like normal. And you have some mini camps, and he's able to recover, train. But it's a business, man. It's like usually the first round picks will still get a look somewhere. So, you got to hope for the all the best wishes go out to Artie Burns. And, here's a guy that was like, raising his brothers or sisters or whatever, too, and had to grow up as, a lot faster than some of us did, and makes it to the NFL, and it's a dream thing for everyone. And unfortunately, an injury can take that all away in a blink of an eye. So, all the best wishes for him. But aside from all that, and any kind of little bit of jokes and anything that we make, I mean, the Steelers really struggled with. We know how bad the secondaries and some of the defense wasn't up to par. We're not talking about whether they've improved that. We're talking about whether this is the best maybe in the NFL. I don't want to hear about all the money that the Bengals are sinking into their secondary and guys are flipping in and out of there, yet you get to see that work first. And, the only other – one of the secondaries that you really compete with is within their own division with the Ravens, and we've said that with Marlon Humphrey and Earl Thomas and, Marcus Peters when he wants to put some effort in. Wasn't it – who stiff-armed him? Was it Deontay Johnson? Was that the highlight? It just shows the guy has a very a lax attitude toward tackling. And we saw that when he played with the Chiefs, and it's likely why the Rams were willing to give him up and whatnot. It's no mistake about it. He's a turnover machine. He has a knack for coming up with the football. But otherwise, I take that into huge consideration. I don't say that just because he's a Raven. I always thought that even back when he was with the Chiefs and even with the Rams. I was thinking you get some of the – what is it with guys who catch the ball or defend against the pass, being prima donnas, either side of the ball? You get a lot of them, don't you? Wide receivers and DBs. I mean, you really do. And it's okay. You get some swagger or swag in and some swaggy with like William Gay, who tied Rod Woodson, didn't he? Doesn't he have six pick sixes? So, I mean, he's like for all-time franchise lead. That's a crazy trivia question. It was the other one, too. Speaking of trivia questions, before we get on to the secondary, remind me in a minute. It's about Ben and his record versus other teams, because I think there's only like five teams he has a losing record against, and two or three of them are NFC teams, believe it or not. That's pretty crazy when you think about it. But anyways, I feel they're one of the best, if not the best, in the league, and it's hard to argue when you have the level of talent that Steven Nelson played up to. He plays up to that. He should be recognized like Gilmore has been. Joe Hayden makes the Pro Bowl. I know we joke about that, but it's still acknowledging he's got to be, what, top five or so in at his position amongst his peers. And Minkah was an All-Pro. Really, really hard to argue that whole group there. That's just three. We don't even talk about how much of an integral part that Mike Hilton plays in all this, coming off the edge or whatever be the case. He's a heck of a player as a nickel also. It seemed it's just a perfect storm of all these things that came together. They went and got their safety in the first round too with Terrell Edmonds, and he's got the tools too. So I don't hesitate in saying they're one of the best, if not the best, in the league.
I don't either. In fact, I think I put that in my 53-man projection article. That's exactly the way I view them. And if anybody wants to accuse me of being on their jock, go ahead, fight me. Show me why they're not, because they are. And if you're going to fight me, remember, I've been doing 750 push-ups on average a day for the last month.
So that means he's worn down and vulnerable and sore. Strong, but
no,
sore.
It does not.
Don't let him recover strong. For 2 days.
He's strong like bull.
Like bull. I will break you.
I will break you.
Yeah, I see you out in the wilderness, the Appalachians, like Rocky out in Russia, you know, trudging through the snow and everything like that. That's no joke, though. Follow Brian on Twitter and see some of – you posted on Twitter, too, right? I see him on Facebook.
Yeah.
I know Facebook's more personal.
Facebook
but
and Twitter.
On Twitter. He's always doing the nature walks and everything like that. Anything more on the secondary or we move on?
No, I think we move on. There's nothing more to say other than they're great.
Okay, we got two bounce back guys then. James Conner okay. and Juju Smith-Schuster, because they were both Pro Bowl guys the previous year, and both guys dealt with injuries last year. Do they bounce back this year? I think Juju does. Does James Conner get used like the bull, like the bell cow? Or we're hearing about like Benny Snell football and trimming up and Anthony McFarland hitting the hole fast and breaking open for stuff. Do they start mixing it up and finally become a running back by committee type team like so many others have? I don't know. It's gonna be a little harder for Connor, I think. I think Juju will have the bounce back too, though.
Here's the thing about Juju. Juju's bounce back is only partially up to Juju, right? And having Ben Roethlisberger come back and be a top-tier quarterback certainly helps Juju try and bounce back on his year. I'm going to say this, and I know the beat writers have been saying it as well, and especially Ed Bouchette has been all over this, I think. I still, despite the fact that I agree with you, I think Juju will have a bounce back year. I think this is Juju's last year in Pittsburgh.
I know.
Unless he's a second round guy, right? So this is year four, right?
Yes, it is. Contract year. TJ will be, you know, probably the fifth year option on it being a first round pick.
Yep.
It's hard to say where the money's allocated, this, that, and the other thing. If he has a down year, some other team will pay him a lot of money and the Steelers won't. And we still don't know what, you know, what's lying in wait as far as a Chase Claypool. If Deontay Johnson or James Washington ascend to the call too, very likely that something like that will happen. Do they say bye to both, Connor and Juju? I think they're in a better position to say bye to Connor.
There's a much bigger chance that both are gone at the end of this year than I would have said at the beginning of the year, especially with the kind of feedback that you're getting from Joe Hayden about Chase Claypool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's still green. He's still got some work to do, you know, and you just can't. And no one, I don't ever place the overnight expectations on someone. I mean, Juju just popped out onto the page and onto the scene. And it'll be interesting to see because, you know, money talks. We don't even know what's going to happen. Fans, no fans, this, that, and the other thing with salary caps, too, that could really wreak havoc on what happens next season. I just think that the Steelers put themselves in a position to say goodbye to James Conner. Even more easily, this comes down to like the Ramon Foster, Kelvin Beachum argument before, I think, when we talk about this maybe next year. But I think both of them, I don't think they're going to have necessarily crappy seasons unless they're beat up, banged up and stuff like that. Offensive line, bounce back season for the offensive line. I mean, you got Ville in a contract year. You still have DeCastro and Pouncey. Looks like Wisniewski is going to be the B.J. Finney role. And not necessarily jump in as the starter. They want to put Matt Filer there as the left guard in place of Ramon Foster, which they toyed with for one game last year against the Rams. It was successful with Chooks, and Chooks has been getting looks. They're working Banner there, but they've been working Banner as a as the tight end type, the blocking tight end type. And they
had him on the jugs machine, man.
Yeah. So, oh boy. And if he catches some passes from, I wish there was a preseason. Can you imagine that? He catches a pass from Duck. The tweets would be priceless. I mean, bounce back year for the offensive line. I think so. I think they'll be healthy, and I think you'll have the same consistent unit for all 16 games, whatever that looks like. I think they'll improve just based on that and having Ben.
Yeah, look, I cannot overemphasize the amount of improvement the offense will get simply from having Ben Roethlisberger back at quarterback. Every aspect of the game will improve because of that. The line, the tight ends, the running backs, the wide receivers, and of course the quarterback position. With that being said, though, there's some scary stuff kind of coming out of camp. You know, you got DeCastro wondering about whether Villanueva is going to play any longer after this year. Is he at the end of his rope? So, you know, you do start to see the years have crept up on these guys and how much longer this is going to be a group, that is a top tier line is certainly something that's up for debate. But for this year, yeah, I think they have a bounce back year. I think they'll be better. I think they'll be more consistent. I think putting Filer in at guard and then letting Banner and Chooks, Okorafor battle it out for that right tackle position, I think it's gonna bond them all together.
Yeah,
I think Pouncey can be good. And you know, if this is Villanueva's last hurrah, which it could be. You know, you've got guys there that maybe can step up as we move down the way.
Well, let me offer this. I think they want Okorafor to be the guy because he's got an extra year on his contract still.
Yeah.
So he's still good. He's only entering year three where Banner was a restricted guy. You're talking about re-signing people and paying people. I think that's part of it. I think it's also that. You know, they're still homegrown guys. And I look at, what is it? Jerron Jones is the XFL guy they brought in to camp, too. Yeah. And he's like 6'6", 320. He's another, you know, kind of freak of nature, so to speak. So Chooks is the same size, actually. 6'6", 320, I think, is what he's listed as. So those are the big boys. Those are some hosses there. And you know what else? If Villanueva doesn't play beyond, or if he goes to like year to year or something like that, because he's an older guy. You know what? He's a self-made guy. He really is.
I mean, you go absolutely.
You got to be an Army Ranger, and then you decide, hey, I'm going to non-traditional student, older in his years, try out for pro football. Catches the eye of a guy who loves large men, Mike Tomlin, and you know, that's not the first guy. I mean, Banner's huge. Banner's dropped some weight, too. And they, you know, whatever Tomlin sees in some of these guys to pick up his street free agents or whatever. And that's what you're losing with training camp, or I should say preseason games, too, is you scout these guys on the competition and say, hey, you know, if he's like a cut from that 53, maybe this is a guy that we could bring in and take a look at. I think it got him cast wrong. I see his talent, Rosie Nix, I see his talent as being a fullback, not the undersized nose tackle he was at Kent State. You know, those are the type of things. Or Villanueva as an offensive lineman or tight end. Or I should say, I'm sorry, he was defensive end when he was with the Eagles. He's done all those things, though, when he was with Army. You know, he can walk away just because it's like, nah, you know, it's like Forrest Gump. He's running across the country. And he's like, I think I'm going to go home now. And he just decides to go home. I think that's what could end up happening. Eric Ebron.
I'm tired.
Yeah. Eric Ebron, real deal? Think he was just hampered by injuries and bad quarterback play in that situation, too? I mean, they lost Andrew Luck last year. They didn't even know they lost him. It was like a charades up until, you know, I think people were maybe even still drafting Andrew Luck, or he was in the fantasy football guides and stuff last year. So, you know, you go to Jacoby Brissett and Brian Hoyer, and then he gets hurt too. Ebron does. So you know, we're hearing a lot of good things. We're hearing he's happy. We're also hearing some of the beat writers really take him to task about, you know, blocking and being a willing blocker. Oh, yeah. And we'll see. You know, he may not necessarily be needed in that aspect unless maybe Vance McDonald gets beat up. And you hope to think they've talked about the two. Randy Fickner has talked about the two tight end sets getting them both on the field at the same time. But they're going to counterbalance each other also, so one or the other doesn't have to play the full 100% of whatever they feel the tight ends will be out there doing. And that should that should preserve both of those guys to be a menace towards all of these opponents. So are you buying the Eric Ebron hype without actually seeing him? I do, just because I know Ben likes his big back-of-the-end-zone targets.
You know, I buy any kind of preseason hype. I buy with a grain of salt.
So do we. We all do.
To begin with, you know. We all remember what's his name? The preseason wonder Camp Pimam, that everybody was convinced our boy Zakadonia was in a tizzy.
Matthew Thomas.
Not even Matthew Thomas, is a receiver. The receiver that they brought in, everybody thought he was gonna be fantastic. He lit it up in preseason and then not Dante Moncrief.
And not Sammy Coates.
No, not Coatsy. It was a free agent guy.
Justin Hunter?
Yeah, there you go. Justin Hunter.
Yeah.
Catching everything under the sun at the beginning of camp. He's doing all this acrobatic stuff. And where did he go? Nowhere. So am I buying it all with a grain of salt? Here's the difference, though. Ebron has some cred. You know, I mean, it's not that he's just been a waste. I mean, he's scored a lot of touchdowns. He's been a red zone target for people. Yes, he's had the reputation of having the drops on occasion. And it comes as no surprise he doesn't want to block. Nobody expected him. We all said that when he was signed. He ain't going to want to block. But, you know, he's at least, as we were saying in the back rooms, right? Maybe he'll run in front of a guy, you know, and just make him swerve. That counts as a block. It may not be physical, but it kept him off of target, right?
The drop thing was a lot of maybe the same situation with poor quarterbacking last year. You go back to Detroit, he caught, if you toss out his rookie year with the 53%, I mean, the guy's catching over 60-some percent of his passes. It's not terrible. I mean, that's exactly where you want your quarterbacks to be, is in the 60-ish range when it comes to completing passes. You know what I mean? 2 out of 3, that's where you want them to be at. And you're considering that sometimes the quarterbacks, we're not talking about making a bad pass from somebody, that, you know, at a very short distance either. They're able to connect and make those throws. But, you know, a lot of bends and completes are just taking shots downfield. Those are the shots that Ebron is going to line up against some poor linebacker. I said, what do you do when you get these guys on the field? I said, you have like Ebron. Maybe you don't even have Vance out there, but you have both. And then you have like something like Juju and Chase Claypool or even Deontay. I mean, I understand. There you go. There's three wide receivers, two tight ends. You don't even have anybody in the backfield, maybe. But let's just say in the case of you have two wide receivers, two tight ends, you have James Conner or even Jalen Samuels, and all of a sudden I hate always tipping my cap to, you know, being a pass play, like you put Samuels out in the slot or something like that. But it's like, who are the linebackers covering? And, you know, who are the safeties watching? That could be kind of dangerous. I know I threw Claypool out there already, but put Deontay over there or even James Washington maybe. It's very tough to cover all those weapons in the offense, so I kind of buy it. Are we buying the Steelers? We don't want to jump all the way to Super Bowl contender. We always think they're a Super Bowl contender. Are we buying that? Everybody's saying Baltimore. There's people out there that are saying 16-0. I think that's highly unrealistic. I don't even know that they get to the 14 that they had last year. I get everybody thinks this offense is going to be, you know, incredibly over the top, and it's going to be unstoppable. But to replicate the success they had and also play against some of the poor teams, I just don't see it happening, Brian. I think they could end up Baltimore. It's going to be between Baltimore and Pittsburgh, obviously.
Absolutely.
For the AFC North.
That's true.
But I don't see them 16-0. I don't see them 14-2 or whatever, 13-3. I get everybody on paper says this, that, and the other thing when you're looking at these schedules. We all think it's a weak schedule, and it's projected that the Ravens and Steelers have among the weakest schedules in the league because they share a lot of the same common opponents. But at the same time, you've got players who've opted out. You've got players that are going to go on these COVID lists or whatever. You're going to have injuries and things of that nature. You're going to have some surprises that come up during the season. And I think it's just and I also think teams have film, and they are going to be better prepared for an opponent such as Lamar Jackson and the Ravens for them to be able to do the same exact thing they did last year. I just don't see it happening. But just by the sheer amount of respect, they're still returning a lot of the same guys. I think their draft was very solid. The Steelers are returning some of the guys that they were missing as part of that piece of the puzzle. And the Steelers should have had their number last year in that Week 5 game. And I throw out the Week 17 game because that was especially a fourth quarter implosion where it was just like, what, the safety, the mishandled ball by Duck, one hand in it and everything. It was just very sloppy football by that point. You had guys that weren't playing like Connor and Pouncey and stuff of that nature. And just a team, I think, that was deflated and realized what their fate was at that point after dropping those games to the Bills, to the Jets, the erratic quarterback play. Duck gets benched. Mason gets hurt. Bring Duck back out there. You don't know what's in the psyche of that to turn around 1 week and then the next and be able to do all that. So, you know, I don't want to necessarily compare because I think it's apples and oranges, and both teams are going to be somewhat different this season. But that's the fundamental reason why I don't think that the Ravens are going to be a 16-0 type juggernaut. Look, if anybody had an opportunity to do it, it would be maybe the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, they're the defending Super Bowl champ, and I feel like people overlook that. And I still don't think that anybody – I really don't feel that anybody's ever going to replicate the perfect season. I know the Patriots got close. They're sure as heck not going to do it this year either. So, Steelers' chances of winning the AFC North, I think it could come right down to another one of those Thanksgiving. That could be the one that, you know, everything hinges on, just like it has in the past. That late year game between the two, the de facto AFC North championship. Sorry, Cleveland. Sorry, Cincinnati. You're not in a conversation.
Yeah, I look. You have to say it is the Ravens' division right now to lose just because they've won it, right? They're the defending division champs. And until the season gets played, you have to give them that level of respect. Now, you have to pardon me while I go vomit for saying that.
Yeah.
But that being said, that's, you know, we may dislike the Ravens a lot, but they're, you know, it is a team that we can respect because as much as we don't like them, they're very similar to the Steelers. They're well-run organizations. They play the right way. They tend to do the right things. And as a result, they tend to come out towards the top. 16-0? No, come on. Give me a break. They're not going to go 16-0. That's disrespectful to other teams to begin with. And it's very disrespectful to the Steelers, who, as you said, should have beaten them one of those two games last season. I just don't see that. Do I think that they're going to have the same level of success that they had last season? I actually don't, because that's the thing about professional football. When you do something successful, as the Ravens did last year, people figure out how to stop it, and they adjust to it, and they find ways to handle it. And they can look at some roadmaps, like that Steelers game that we were at, to find ways to handle Lamar Jackson, and just adding other running backs into that mix. I don't know. And they lost some guys on defense. They still have, a good core team, but I think it's between the Steelers and the Ravens as to who's going to win the division. And I think it's very likely that the team that doesn't win it makes it in as a wild card. No, I don't think the Browns and the Bengals are in that conversation yet. The Browns could be creeping up, but until the Browns can get through a season without, just being ridiculously brownie.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how to put it any other way. Until they can stop being the Browns, I can't keep them in the conversation.
Jarvis Landry having an injury or having a surgery too. And, you know, these guys,
their corner, one of their corners just lacerated a kidney.
I mean, Mac Wilson too, linebacker, they were already thin there. We're going to be talking more about the AFC North stuff coming up, but they're just, aside from the injuries, you have a brand new coaching staff that hasn't had time with this team. You know, what are they doing? Zoom meetings to try and get these guys on the same page? And this is Baker Mayfield's, fourth coach? Or how many years has he been in already? Year three for him too, right? So it's his third offensive coordinator again. And, you know, he had Todd Haley, he had Freddie Kitchens, and then whatever, you know, Freddie was supposed to be the horse whisperer there last year. And that's why I still downplay a lot of that. I think their defense is going to have some questions no matter how much money they give Myles Garrett, and seeing that he's coming back. And, I like some of the things that they have on offense, but I don't know that making Austin Hooper the previously highest paid tight end necessarily justifiable to take the team over the top. There's some dissent in the ranks, too, with Njoku wanting to trade and things of that nature. But we're going to get into all that in a future upcoming episode. I think we're going to do the same thing as last year and take a look at all three of those teams and inspire the ire of the opposing fan bases when they hear our biased homer remarks about how their teams suck. I wasn't wrong about Odell last year, though. Not in the least bit. You know, hey.
Neither of us were.
You know, throw as much money as you want at those guys. And I forget. I'm going to have to see how much they collectively make. It's a boatload of money, that's for sure. But you look at what they did last year, and I'm pulling it up right now. You paid for, okay, they're both 1,000-yard receivers in Landry and Odell Beckham, but you paid for 10 total touchdowns, 6 from Landry and 4 from Beckham. Yikes. I mean, that's pretty gross there. So as I look this up and we're talking money, would you put your money on the Steelers to win the Super Bowl? No more New England Patriots in the way, but they still got the Ravens in their division and then the Chiefs, too, or, you know, defending champs.
I actually, what's the odds?
You know, I was
look them up real quick. Yeah, depending on what the odds are, I'd take that bet. I'll tell you why. Look, people have disrespected Ben Roethlisberger for years, and they're going to even more disrespect him this season. And nobody is giving him the credit that he deserves for the player that he's been. And if he is even remotely as recovered as they seem to think he is, and as he appears to be, you know, there's no reason they can't. They have a talented team, and the defense is, I think, maybe the best in the league. And when you start to add that kind of stuff up, there's no reason they can't win the Super Bowl. You know, with the right odds, I'd put some money on that.
I got some numbers for you. Two highest paid players on the Cleveland Browns are Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham. A cap number of 14.5 and 14. Well, they're basically 300,000 apart. 14.5 and 14.2. Landry and Beckham, and 10 touchdowns. That's not going to cut it. And I'm not sure. Hooper somewhere in here the dead money on him is ridiculous. His dead money is let me see. Dead money, 18.5 this year. That's too rich for my blood. That's actually more. It's more than a lot of guys on this route, but it's more than Jarvis Landry's 17.5 and Beckham's 11.1. That's just absolutely the amount of money they got on some guys. Although the dead cap on Myles Garrett is 66.5. So, anyways, Ravens are right now. This is 3 days ago, courtesy of ESPN, or 4 days ago, whatever. Earlier in the week. 7-1, they opened 8-1, odds to win the AFC, 3-1. Steelers are 25-1, opened at 28-1, 9-1 odds to win the AFC. The division for the Ravens, they're minus 300, and the Steelers are plus 475, which the Browns are only plus 450 here, but the Browns are 35-1, open 40-1 for Super Bowl, 18-1 to win the AFC. Their odds to make the playoffs, they're 105. So people in Vegas aren't thinking. They're on the positive end, and the Steelers are on the negative end at minus 135. The Ravens are minus 900 as a yes to make the playoffs. So that just tells you they're thinking they're a shoe-in. They think the Steelers are more closer to even there on the bet. But the Browns are on the opposite end where, you know, you're getting laid there on the money, on the odds. To bet them to make the playoffs. The Bengals are 100-1. So Joe Burrow is not going to be enough maybe to turn that around. We shall see. The thing that's interesting here is, though, is that the Steelers share the same odds as the Colts, who are the favorite here to win the AFC South, and actually better odds than the Titans. So the Titans are at 30-1. You look at the Patriots, 20-1. That's still, wow, they still think that much better? That's insane.
I think it's crazy. You know, I guess he's a sports writer on Yahoo, Frank Schwab. Have you ever heard of him?
Yeah.
Yeah. He actually thinks the best value bet out there is on the Super Bowl is the Pittsburgh Steelers.
It might be. I mean, I'm reading it here just to make sure I didn't have something old. This was, they sourced this from Caesar's Sportsbook. So the Patriots aren't even the favorites to win the AFC East. But, you know, 20 to 1, the Bills are 25 to 1, and then you got the Jets and Dolphins at 100 to 1. So they're still in the same territory as the Bengals. And just to close out, well, the rest of the conference here, Chiefs are 4 and 1, Raiders at 30 to 1, Chargers 45 to 1, and Broncos 50 to 1. So, you know, some interesting numbers. I mean, when you think about it, just in that quick context, too. I mean, I would put the Steelers as the third favorite in the entire conference, provided that they could get into the dance, which, you know, they may have to be a wild card within their own division. And we've talked about this in the past. The teams that have most derailed the Ravens and the Steelers are each other. Aside from the Patriots being there, those are the AFC favorites over, you know, aside from Andy Reid finally getting it done and, you know, Patrick Mahomes, you know, looking like the young prodigy that he is. And probably being a thorn in people's sides for maybe another 15 years now, that's where we're at. So, Brian, you know what? I think we'll close it at that, buddy. Yeah, I was going to ask some other questions and some odds of having fans and stuff like that, but we're up against it, and we'll leave that for another time because there's constant changing information, and the Steelers have quite the mess they're trying to figure out with their ticket stuff, too, as I'm sure you know as well as I do at this point, you know, with the opting out, or you were holding everybody's money up for a refund, and then they were talking about, you know, your seats aren't going to be the same seats, but your seats, you know, will be comparable, and you could allocate the funds of this. You don't even know if you're going to be able to transfer tickets to other people, and it's just too much of a headache for a lot of people to deal with, particularly out-of-towners. You know, like ourselves, they have to travel to go there. It's like, you don't, what do? You burn a vacation day and then you don't have plans? And by the way, I wanted to put this out there. I had to put this out there. Everyone, thank you for your response with the game day tailgate experience stuff that was going to happen in Jacksonville. All of those plans are no longer going to happen
kaput.
As well. Yeah, they're kaput. Coronavirus kaput it, and you cannot kaput it back together again. Unfortunately, I won't get to see you in New York or in Jacksonville this year as we were hoping to plan. But I don't know. Florida's starting to open up some things, but I think tailgating still maybe too much of a hot button type thing, even if they do allow people into the stadiums. I was wondering how Pittsburgh's going to end up doing that, if they're going to end up doing that. And you got a lot of you could say that, like, maybe the Elko lot shut down, but what do you do with some of the cash only type drive ups day of, like, maybe they'll be packed. Maybe they'll allow some people in there. I mean, no one's caring about social distancing, especially in Buffalo, among other places.
Didn't social distancing already exist in Buffalo just by default?
Oh, geez.
I don't know. I just thought, you know, you're in Buffalo. You're looking at people going, eh, stay away from me.
Yeah, I guess. Well, hey, don't stay away from me too long again, fool. We'll have to... We're getting beat up over here. We're trying to stay on our schedule and having things to also discuss with all of you fine folks. But it's good to be back on the horn with you here, buddy. And not, you know,
absolutely.
Kinda, it's good to have the banter and the back and forth. And you know, we'll check out the tandem bicycle at some point.
No, we're not doing that. I'm telling you, we're not doing that. We could canoe. How about that? We'll do a tandem canoe.
Kayaking. Can you do?
I can do a kayak.
I could do the kayak. You're a crazy mountain man now.
I am.
Like my old buddy Moondog, I used to talk about. That was his given nickname. I mean, he was
Moondog.
He's a Bigfoot hunter, and he had hands like leather too. He worked in a foundry, so I mean, he was a intimidating looking guy. He had the whole beard. You kind of shaved everything into a mohawk, so you're not as intimidating. But yeah, he was a Bigfoot hunter. That was some interesting stuff too. So. Conspiracy theorists that are out there, so we'll figure out you know, what's going on with this upcoming season. We'll be back with you with some more great programming. So Brian, thanks once again for joining me, my friend.
You're welcome, and let your buddy know his name is Daryl.
No, Daryl and Daryl.
No, Bigfoot.
Oh,
he doesn't like Darryl, to be called Bigfoot. No, his name is Daryl.
Daryl, the Jack Links guy, whatever. So, yeah, we'll be back to you hopefully early next week, folks, and maybe we'll have some more developments to opine on and some other fun things. So, and hopefully you dig the new entrance music. And for the guy who offered, hey, we may check into that too. I didn't forget about that. We've been so caught up, we can't even get a show recorded. And part of that had to deal with a mother-in-law visiting on my end. We know how the in-laws are, so just couldn't get on the same page. But
yep.
Yeah, exactly. We can't say anything much more. She'll smite me.
She's a wonderful person.
Very wonderful person. Nice lady. So anyways, folks, that'll do it for us. My name's Joe. His name's Brian. Until next time, as always, don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. And be safe, be good, and we'll catch you later.
We would like to thank you for listening and remind our listeners to follow us on social media and our website, www.steelcityunderground.com.